Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the QPR Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and Julian Monaghan and Gareth Dixon of the Ranger Things podcast. Gents, quiet week. Not a lot for us to talk about.
Not really.
Nothing.
What's
nothing
going on?
Nothing major happened.
We're just talking about Fulham getting relegated. Yeah,
or not. They're not relegated yet. Have you had a good week? Anyone get sold by any April Fools?
Well, I think there's an April Fool's been going on all week, but we haven't worked out when it's going to end.
A couple of decades.
So we are, of course, talking about Steve McLaren, who lost his job yesterday on April Fool's Day. There was speculation on the Brentford Fan Show yesterday that the club would have had serious conversations about not announcing it before lunchtime, in case people actually assumed it was an April Fool. As far as you're concerned, it was a terrible result against Bolton. Do you think this was deserved?
It's a terrible run of results, really. It's been coming for a while. I kind of heard a rumour that if we didn't get a draw at Hull, where we were 2-0 down, that he was going to go then. So it wasn't just on the Bolton game. It wasn't just on that farcical substitution situation with Pavel being taken off, and it was Rangel taken off. So I think the writing's been on the wall for a while. For me, he's been quite unlucky at times, McLaren, in terms of the injuries he's had, the run of games we've had, the amount of games we had in February. But you can't have the three games at home we've had in terms of Stoke being down to 10 men for 80 minutes, a Rotherham losing late on, and then Bolton on Saturday with a club that are even in more disarray than us, which is hard to do.
And they've managed it by some distance
really well,
and
they still beat us.
Yeah. If you take him and the performances over the last 15 games in isolation, most managers get sacked for that kind of run. And if you look at some of our previous managers in Hasselbank and Ollie, they've come a cropper a bit earlier. I just hope there's a plan, because I really worry that there is no plan. And it feels like there's no plan. You know, we've got through so many managers over the last few years. And actually, I know Ollie spoke quite vehemently over on a rival radio show about how he felt he'd been usurped before it happened. But at least they felt like there was a plan there. They lined up McLaren and they knew what they were doing. I don't know that we know this time again. I feel it's like we've got rid of him, thinking we'll get someone in before the end of the season, they can start. But I'm worried there isn't a plan.
But you're looking at what the betting market's saying and the papers are saying, and people like Tim Sherwood, who, you know, following Swindon and how he divides opinion anyway. You think, is that really what the hope is and the aspiration is? Is that the plan?
Yeah, and the only thing he really seems to dine out on, as he seems to phrase it, that he effectively gave birth to Harry Kane single-handedly. Oh. That is his one.
Well, it was Ramsey, wasn't it?
It's all part of the same clique, I think, really, which I think is the issue here, that it is potentially a little bit of a clique, and people are saying, well, what's Les Ferdinand doing now as a director of football? What has he done? What's he doing to date? Do you just give him the Sherwood appointment, because that's obviously what he wants, and let Ramsey, Ferdinand and Sherwood either live or die by the sword and give him the job? But he's not the man for QPR, Tim Sherwood, for the fans, definitely not.
In terms of the McLaren sacking itself, are you as fans pleased to see the back of him?
I'm not really because I was a bit numb with the season, a bit numb with the performances. There was some stuff earlier on the season where we had that good run. I felt he was more organised as a manager. I felt at times when we had the players fit, we were playing better football. Yes, it's been pretty dire recently. He has had some bad luck. But, you know, we've got to give someone a chance more than a season. We keep sacking these managers after 1 year. And, you know, I've seen a lot of social media where people are like, he's a Muppet, get rid of him. But... you know, he's had a lot of things shackled. He had no money to sign anybody in the transfer window. Obviously, you know, a team that was inadequate from the start. I personally feel he's probably lived and died by those loan signings, where he's probably gone after that disastrous start and said, guys, if you don't give me something to go and get these, we're going to get relegated. They panicked. He got what he wanted, and then it hasn't worked enough. And they've all got injured. Hemed's been a bit of a disaster. You know, he was injured. He was okay before he got injured, but then it's been terrible. Rangel and Cameron were great successes, but they've been injured. So I feel a bit sorry for him. But if you look at the last 15 games, most managers get sacked off the back of that performance. Yeah. So from that perspective, yes. If you've got any faith that you can turn it around, keep him. If you think that that's just systemic in the squad, then yeah, fair enough.
I think the problem with it was is that the diversion from any long-term strategy was quite clear and obvious again. And it was quite clear and obvious that it was a bit of a gut decision. It's somebody's got the on the ear of the shareholders. It's not a Lee Hughes, because everyone thinks rates Lee Hughes as a chief executive. It doesn't feel like a Les decision. And it's then it's like, well, we're going to get youngsters through. Now we're struggling. We're going to get experienced pros in. We're going to loan youngsters out when actually they're the right players to come in now. It's a perfect storm of players out of back four on Saturday that are out of contract. That's just, are they really going to be fighting for you? You know, going down against Bolton, do they really want to think, right, we've got to grind it out here. Where's the leaders on the pitch? So it just feels that it's like another strategy change. Who's making the decisions? Is it Tony Fernandez? Is it Lee Hughes? Is it Amit Bhatia? Is it Les Ferdinand? Is it Chris Ramsey? It's like, it's
that's
who?
Too many names.
Well, exactly.
Jude
too many chiefs.
Jude
the Cat, the tea lady, whatever. But it's just too many names. It's not one person taking control there and saying, this is what we're doing. This is what we're doing for 2, 3, 4 seasons. And we'll see where we're at. It's just too much change all over again.
I almost feel like they've watched the 4-year plan DVD again. They've kind of got 3 disastrous seasons and then it'll just suddenly happen. And we've had 4 disastrous seasons under Fernandez, maybe more. When did he arrive? But it feels like 4, maybe 5 disastrous seasons. And he's
under
thinking,
Fernandez?
Yeah.
And well, he's McLaren's thinking, the manager with the highest win rate under Fernandez, well, which says a lot. 16 wins out of 46 games, I think. And yeah, he's been there a while. And it just feels like there's too much kind of like people getting involved with this in people's ear. The Twitter RT, the people that can just have a little bit of QPR respect and their QPR legends and just have a chat. And it's like, all of a sudden, let's change the manager. It's like, I agree with Julian. I don't think he was doing.
What's going to, you know.
Who's going to come in?
What's next?
We run a poll.
Who's going to take it? Well, who's going to take it?
It doesn't matter. You could have Sherwood. You could have Warburton. You could have Gareth Ainsworth. You could have Lee Bowyer. Does it really matter? And that's the problem. There's a manager out there, the way that QPR run, that could come in, embed youngsters in, go down the lower leagues, get players in for next season. That's the man for the job. But we don't know if that's what we're going to do.
In terms of the youngsters, do you think that's one area where McLaren got it wrong? In the sense that we've said a lot on this show that next season the youth are going to be crucial, and he hasn't really dived into giving them chances.
No, I said it earlier the season when obviously after the first 4 games, he probably looks at it and goes, it's not working with the youth, so we've got to bring in some older heads. I think the balance has to be right, but I felt throughout the season he hasn't played the youngsters enough. There's been a couple of examples recently where Bright had a good game and then wasn't even on the bench, was on the bench the next game, but not in the team. You know, sending out Smith when I thought he'd had some decent games, especially last season, which maybe he hadn't seen. But, you know, sending him out on loan. My view on that was he was doing that because they're the first team next year. But I felt he could have kept some of them in the squad to replace the injured players, to be in the first team.
So
this
they're used
season.
To it.
We felt safe as well. When they went out on loan, we felt safe. I still think we are safe because the 3 at the bottom are just that bad. Rotherham are going to have to go on a mighty run to catch us.
And they've got some really
bad
fixtures.
And their fixtures are terrible. So it felt safe and it's felt like the right thing to do. But I think they could have been in and around the first team squad. Otte on loan at bottom 4 League One side, sitting on the bench. It's not good enough.
Yeah. No. Well, it sounds like the consensus in the studio is that the decision to get rid of Steve McLaren was broadly the right one. But the new man has to be the right man and there has to be a plan in place. Yeah. Don't go anywhere because coming up, we'll be talking to a man who might be a man with a plan. It's Sean Derry, former QPR midfielder.
This is Love Sport.
You are listening to the QPR Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and Julian Monaghan and Gareth Dixon from the Ranger Things podcast. And I'm delighted to say we're also joined on the line by QPR favourite Sean Derry. Evening, Sean. Thanks ever so much for joining us. Who replaces McLaren? What is next?
Hi guys, how are you? You okay?
Very well, yeah, all good.
Well, we were good.
Ashley Young's just been sent off Man United, so we're a little bit better now.
Yeah, you must love that.
Yeah, some not so fond memories there, are they?
Yeah, exactly.
He definitely deserved it, unlike you. He definitely deserved it.
Who replaces Steve? Kyle? I mean, what a question. I mean, obviously, you know, there's been a number of changes at Loftus Road in recent years, and I just caught the back end of your chat there just as I was waiting to come on, and, you know, I think one of you guys said whoever the next guy is going to come in, you know, there needs to be a definitive plan, and there needs to be, you know, some kind of longevity that goes alongside this plan as well, because, you know, you can't afford just to keep on changing managers at any level. I don't think it's healthy. I don't think it creates no stability for anybody involved in the football club.
Yeah, agreed.
And do you think at Rangers, I mean, we seem to be, I thought it was a blessing, Sean, in the fact that we've got the likes of Chris Ramsey there, who's a phenomenal coach, youth team players, who's had his go at the first team level. We've got Paul Hall, Paul Furlong, all great football people, all lovely fellas. But do you think it's a very difficult environment to come into, that any man coming into that is, there's a lot of football kind of ego and personality to navigate even before you get into QPR being a bit of a basket case?
Well, obviously, when you go into big football clubs, you know, and you must realise that when you go into new surroundings, there's going to be people there with either a past history or personality traits that are, you know, obviously profiled people. I don't think that should scare you. I think that should, you know, you should embrace that challenge as well and try and take people's information on board. You know, whoever the new man's going to be coming into Loftus Road, there's a lot of knowledge there. You know, there's a lot of ex-players there. There's some, you know, an ex-manager there as well, and you shouldn't feel uncomfortable about that. You should back yourself, you know, back yourself to be able to walk into them, into that training ground and Loftus Road, and, you know, you be the leader. And I think that's what everyone's craving for at this moment in time.
Do you think it's important for the next person to be a QPR person per se? People are talking about Gareth Ainsworth coming back in and just having that instant rapport with the fans and having the respect of, you know, potentially the shareholders as well, because it seems to matter to the likes of Tony Fernandes that the QPR people or their amazing coaches by respect. But do they have to be a QPR person to make it work at QPR?
I mean, it's worked in the past and it's worked at different football clubs, and, you know, to a degree it helps. I think, you know, you perhaps get given a little bit more time, but you do get judged on your work. You know, you get judged on the work on the training ground. You get obviously judged on the results that, you know, that you're going to deliver as well. So, I don't know. I think it's more the right guy. I think it's more the right guy rather than it being a QPR man as such. I mean, let's get it right. It's been a difficult time, you know, for the number of managers over the past years that have taken control of QPR once leaving the Premier League. It's been well documented about the you know, the issues, the money issues that have been surrounding the football club as well. And I think when you're not that big club in terms of checkbook big club, it's difficult to get the best players, and you've got to try and develop them in a different way, or try and search for them in a different way, and, you know, and use your contacts and your recruiters a lot more, I suppose, stringently to perhaps what you would do if you had a big checkbook.
Yeah, and we've obviously done a bit of this in my mind in the last few seasons. So we've done that QPR manager with Ollie, and I think he did what he was asked to do. But ultimately, you know, not most fans, I say it was 50-50 decided it was the right thing for him to go. But if I look over the last few seasons, we've had that. We've had an international manager in McLaren. We've had, you know, stalwarts like Redknapp and Hughes that haven't worked. We tried the young, new, up-and-coming manager with Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. We tried the QPR legend Holloway. Is it QPR? Because none of these have worked. What's going wrong? Why can't we find that perfect fit? And based on that record we've had over the last 5-6 years, what should we be looking for?
Well, to answer the question, is it QPR? You know, I'm perhaps slightly biased in terms of I get what QPR is all about. And I think, you know, when you're talking to me directly, you know, I understand what the... you know, kind of what the blueprint is inside the four walls. And I get what the fans are asking for as well. And that can sometimes pose a problem, because I think, you know, over recent years as well, you've seen the highs and lows of QPR, you know, the highs of the Premier League promotion seasons and the lows of coming out of the Premier League, and obviously the disturbances with the money situation. I just think that, you know, somebody who's going to come in needs to have a clear plan. And I think that plan needs to be across the board, not just shared by the manager and his coaching staff. I think it needs to be, you know, let's have a line written in the sand now. Let's have a common ground where everybody's saying, this is what we're doing. We know we've got no money. There's going to be this amount of time spent on this project, and we're going to do it this way. So there's no grey areas no more. And I think that'll help everybody.
Do you think that hasn't been the case before then, Sean, with the last, let's just say the last two managers, or even the last three with McLaren, with Ollie, and with Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink? Do you think there's been a disconnect between what they wanted as managers with their philosophy and what the club wanted or needed?
I suppose one example would be, you know, the struggle of the start, four games not winning, losing them all, you know, and then kind of pressure heaped straight away on Steve and his coaching staff. Then a wonderful run, a brilliant run, great run of results that got everybody doubly excited to try and reach the playoffs.
Sure,
it's been in an
sorry,
been like an emotional roller coaster. And I just think at certain times of the season, there just needs to be that consistency of the message. Listen, we're going to be doing it this way, and let's not get carried away with the highs or the lows.
Sean, I got to ask you, but would you be interested?
What, in the job?
Yeah.
Of course, I would. Would I get it? Probably not. You know,
maybe not. Maybe a combination of Barton, Hill, Derry. You know, those boys are doing all right. Fleetwood. We could, the three amigos could come back and run the club.
Listen. You know when it comes to, obviously, you know, being asked. You know, I kind of knew I'd be asked that question on air. You know, probably a natural question to ask. For me, obviously, you know, I've got strong affinity with QPR. I loved my time there. Absolutely loved my time. And at some point, it would be brilliant to come back to the football club in whatever capacity. You know, if the football club was to ask you, then, you know, I'm saying yes straight away. But I know that they're going to be going for different people, and, you know, they're going to be inviting applicants, and they're going to be interviewing people as well. So the right decision needs to be made. Ultimately, you know, I'm not at QPR. I'm Oxford's assistant manager, and respectfully, I've got my job to do on Saturday, and that's to work for Oxford.
Absolutely. If the new boss isn't going to be you, then, Sean, who of those favourites are you most convinced by? The names we're hearing talked about: Tim Sherwood, Mark Warburton, Gary Rowett, perhaps even Lee Bowyer. Is there anyone there who stands out for you?
Well, there's some great names there. There's some good people. You know, I know a lot of them personally. You know, there's some very good characteristics there that all of them, it would bring some positives to QPR. I was interested to read that it would be, I think I read it on the website, that it would be more of a younger approach, more of a younger manager. If that's the case, then brilliant. You know, it'd be great to see somebody new at the helm, rather than, respectfully, I don't know, somebody who's kind of been around the block three or four times. You don't just want to see another change in 6 months with we having this conversation once again.
Well, both. Bowie is a natural candidate then, with what's being said and the mess that he's dealt with at Charlton with the owners and being out of contract and done a great job for nearly two seasons now.
Oh, he's done a great job. Oh, brilliant job. You know, he's straight. You know, he says what he sees, and I think that goes well as well. He's done a great job for Charlton. I mean, they're in the running themselves. Does Lee want a promotion? Does he want to try and get his, you know, Charlton into the Championship? And, you know, that's a difficult situation. If he was to be asked that question, would you come out of something that's definitely not broken to go in something that you've got to you know, you've got to try and repair a little bit.
Well, he still needs to be offered a new contract at Charlton, of course, if he's going to be there next season. Sean, it's been absolutely lovely talking to you. Thanks ever so much.
Cheers, Sean.
But just before we
let you go,
I need to put you on the spot, I'm afraid, with a score prediction for Norwich at the weekend.
Good luck.
How many times have we seen it when you kind of go there and everything's against you, and then for whatever reason, you know, I've been in clubs where, you know, I've played for a temporary manager, and I don't know, you just feel a little bit more relaxed for whatever reason. You just do. It'd be great to stop this run. You know, the run's been horrible, but I do think it's a unbelievable task ahead. Norwich have been flying, you know. I would love to see QPR. It'd be brilliant to win.
You going for a QPR win, Sean?
Going for 5-0 QPR.
Great. Going for 5-0, top man. Sean,
get that a bookies.
QPR favourite. Lovely to talk to you. Also, some more good news for QPR. There's been silent cheering, whooping, hands in the air, elation in the studio because the score is Watford 4, Fulham 1. Will Hughes put them 2-1 up with a stunning left-footed volley. Striker's finish from Deeney made it 3, and Firmania has heaped on the misery. 4-1, and Fulham look to be going down. And we also have your first two clues from this week's Who Are You? So your first is I once turned out for Cambridge United. And your second is I once moved to a then Premier League club for a £2 million fee. If you want to guess, you can get in touch on 0208 7020 558 or at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
This is Love Sport.
Hello, you are listening to the QPR Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. Some kind of technical difficulty there. I do apologise. No ads seem to have fired, but we'll just have a chat, which is how we like it here on the QPR Fan Show. I'm going to have to ask you quickly about Fulham. There were hands in the air.
I don't really.
No, they've, I don't. They've been down for
other
a long
people's
time.
Misery. I don't really no, relish in. Well, I was more cheering the fact that Man United are losing to Wolves.
So it's only Man United's misery that we relish in.
Look, I don't want Fulham to do well, but I don't really revel in their misery. They're down. No. They've obviously been down for a while.
I just wanted to pick up a point that Sean Derry was making there about, you know, how many times have you seen a club kind of on their uppers, like, you know, go to somewhere like Norwich and get a result? And we've done it before. I remember being in the, I think it was League One, we played Charlton with Mick Harford, who's now at Luton, took us there and Rowan Vine, and we got a result at Charlton, who were flying at the time. And people aren't really talking about John Eustace at the moment. And John Eustace has good reputation, Kidderminster. You know, he'd done really, really well there. He's supposed to be a phenomenal coach. He's a young coach. And if he gets a result there, then all of a sudden his hat's in the ring if you're looking for a young, progressive coach that the owners will know. So it'll be interesting.
But is that a plan?
No, it's not a plan.
For me, again, there is no plan. No.
That's
the thing that says about the club being really badly run is.
But that's why Ramsey got the job. Sunderland.
Yeah, of course. But it's like, seriously, what's the point of sacking McLaren this early if you haven't worked out what your plan is? We've done this before. It doesn't work. The only time we had a plan was last time, and that was, unfortunately, we thought Ollie wasn't the right person to bring the youngsters forward, bring McLaren in, put his arm around them and do that. And then they've given him less than a year. Okay, it's been dire, and I'm kind of numb as to whether he should stay or go. But you have to have a plan. And then you've got a team that no one who isn't related to QPR will think that is an appetizing club to come and manage, because you've got no money, you've got a team on relegation form, and you've got a career to worry about. Are you really going to take over QPR and go, my first managerial or even my second managerial job is going to be one that's probably a death knell? And that's what worries me about Ainsworth. Much as I love him, he's a QPR god. Yeah. You bring him in, 12 months' time, people are going to be on his back. And that reputation that he's got of being a
12
rock
months,
god,
I'd say it'd be 12 days at Rangers.
12 days, yeah. 12 hours. And suddenly people are tweeting about getting him out.
Yeah.
Whereas I'd rather keep him as a complete god of a legend. And would it be right for him to come in and take the club in the precarious position it's in?
Probably not. But let's say we run the poll on Twitter, and it was like, who it doesn't matter. I think Michael Gove won our poll, so or was at least
well, joint at least he's hated already. So
exactly, so it doesn't really matter. But him and Sherwood were level. I think it's the fact that it doesn't matter unless QPR all of a sudden get a bit of kind of consistency, a bit of clarity about the direction they're heading. Are we signing low league players? Are we bringing the youth through, or are we going to scramble and panic and sign 3 more players next season on loan? And we don't know that. And I think that the shareholders ultimately have the final say. And it's a really bit of, well, what's the point of having a director of football then in Les Ferdinand if you're going to change your strategy on a whim, on a result? We mentioned Chris Ramsey. He got the job on the back of a Sunderland away win. I mean, many teams have gone to Sunderland and would probably sack their manager because they didn't win by enough. But the idea was the time was Paul Clement coming in, Ramsey got the job. And it's just a bit crazy, really, that the shareholder still has that power. And to be fair, Tony Fernandes gets vilified on Twitter by QPR fans. He's not the majority shareholder of the football club. He's instilled people of like Lee Hughes, who has got the ultimate respect of what he's done at Burnley and what he's done at QPR. You know, Les Ferdinand's a club legend, but they need to be able to be justified and stick by decisions. That's why people are saying now, go and get Tim Sherwood. If that's what you want, go and get it. If he fails, he's gone and you're gone as well. And they need to make that decision about we need a director of football.
Yeah, I'd like to know who's really pulled the strings on this sacking. You may be right, it may be a collective, but is it Les because he signed up his mate Tim Sherwood? And if so, my season ticket won't be renewed next season.
Like many others.
You feel that strongly about it?
What has Tim Sherwood done as a manager? In fact, you know, we were looking at his record. It's actually not that bad because he took over a Champions League team in Spurs. But he was atrocious at Villa and Swindon got rid of him quick. He's got no pedigree in my mind as a manager.
I
have no interest. It's been the last few seasons have just been getting worse and worse. And there was a little bit in the middle of this season where it was a bit better and we didn't look like we were going to get beaten. And I would have thought that was enough to maybe give McLaren a bit longer. But if he's going to bring in Tim Sherwood to replace McLaren, then forget it. I'm not interested.
Yeah, a lot of like that.
Do you think that any appointment of Tim Sherwood would necessarily be a sort of mates, jobs for mates situation? Or could it have been done?
Well, it smells of that. It smells of that, right? Why would you bring in Tim? What's he got that McLaren didn't? What's he got that Ainsworth hasn't? You know, at least as a strategy. With Ainsworth, you could say he's a QPR legend and he's an up-and-coming manager and we'll give him a chance.
Yeah.
If it's Ollie, he did what he was asked to do and he did it with passion, but it just wasn't good enough. If it's McLaren, he was a bit more organised, but it got a bit dull. What's Sherwood bringing that isn't in that list?
It does smell of Tottenham Mafia, if that happens. No, it really does. And I think it's not just in the first team, but within the academy as well. The changes, the wholesale changes, which I think has caused a bit of a divide between the QPR and the new QPR, the old QPR and the new QPR as well, the likes of, you know, the Gallons and people like Kenny Jackett. I don't think Kenny Jackett would come to QPR. I think it would be an impossible job for him, not because of his reputation or his ability as a football manager, but because of politics that have been played out for quite a few years now, played out behind closed scenes and also on Twitter as well. So it's a difficult situation at QPR at the moment. I don't think people kind of pick up on those sort of things with it. And it's just like, it's getting a bit tiresome and they don't really want, and Tim Sherwood would really, you know, talking about season ticket sales after the back of this year, he's not going to put bums on seats. Julian's not the only fan to say that. If Tim Sherwood comes in, it's going to really polarise the fans even more so. He's not wanted at QPR. And he's not going to really win any fans unless he wins the league by a walkover, which we're not going to do next year.
So it sounds pretty definitely like you guys don't want Tim Sherwood as the next man. I know the point we're making here is that it's more about a plan and ethos than it is an individual. But if I had to press you to pick one of these names, who would you go for?
Well, I would, unfortunately for his reputation, I would go with Ainsworth because, you know, there's something to cling on to there. He's young. And he's a QPR guy, so he comes in, he'll immediately get a bounce of everyone in the stadium loving him, which will give him longer than McLaren got. I think I went to one game, I think it was the Watford FA Cup Day game, where we actually sang McLaren's name. Hmm. So, you know, and that was during a period where he was doing quite well and won away at Forest and had a cup run. So, you know, the minute he walks through the door, he'll get eulogised by the fans. But I worry for him because if he takes us down next season, you know, his reputation's in tatters. But of the choice of people out there, he's the only one for me. But I don't know that that's the plan that they put in place.
I think somebody with no baggage is quite important now. I mean, everyone's talking about Gary Rowett. We've courted him twice. He's turned us down twice. He now comes with 2 sackings and baggage. I think somebody that has got no baggage, association with QPR, it could be a foreign manager that we don't know. That will just shut people up because they try and spend 5 weeks trying to find out who he is. Or someone like, he's, you know, Carlos Carvajal, like, we haven't done foreign for a while. We've done QPR, we've done Wild Old Boots, we've done Up and Coming Coach, we haven't done Sosa or Di Canio for a while. So maybe someone that's foreign that we don't know.
Well, I'm expecting the manager to be named in the next 24 hours because there's obviously a plan in place. Otherwise, our club is run even worse than I thought it was previously. And, you know, whether it's politics, whether it's a director of football, whether it's Tony Fernandes not being, you know, he's not the chairman, it's Amit, but whether he's still too influential, I don't know. But it's just an absolute farce.
Yeah.
The big question, of course, is who should be the next manager of QPR? You can get in touch and let us know your thoughts. 0208 70 20 558 or at Love Sport Radio on Twitter. And I have your third Who Are You clue, which is simple. Three words. I like chairs. Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
The QPR fan show here on Love Sport Radio, and it's at that time in the show where we start to look ahead to the next game. It is, of course, Norwich. It's a tough ask for the Hoops, this one.
It's on Sky as well, don't forget that. We don't do well on Sky, just to add it into it. It's a lunchtime kickoff. It's Saturday 12:30. What a better way to spoil your weekend as a QPR fan.
I think I'm shopping at that point. I think I'll be
in Norwich. Waitrose Norwich.
So I can hear the pain from seething out.
We've not had, I mean, 75-76 we lost to Norwich.
3-2.
And we should have won up. I think Jerry France missed a penalty. I was there when Craig Bellamy scored that trick and we threw one down after 9 minutes. Not a happy hunting ground.
No. Well, with that in mind, it's time to hear the Norwich view of things. I'm delighted to say we're joined on the line by Michael Bailey, who's Norwich correspondent for the Eastern Daily Press and Pinken.com. Evening, Michael. Thanks ever so much for joining us. Are you as confident as these guys are unconfident?
Good evening, gents. I'd only just tweet that, I think Norwich's record at Carrow Road against QPR is pretty good. I think the two clubs have played each other so often through their history as well, so... I think with Norwich fans, it's kind of a situation they've been in for a little while now, which is that they are very confident in what their side can do, yet they're kind of conscious that given everything's gone so much better than anyone dared imagine, they're waiting for the maybe the point at which it's going to bite them on the bottom. So they've had not wobbles, but things at home have not been as maybe smooth as they have been away from home. I appreciate I'm completely nitpicking there, but there's an opportunity, I suppose, if QPR can make life difficult for Norwich, that, you know, they might, a bit like they did against Leeds, I suppose, they get themselves ahead and then things just don't quite fall for you. But I think we're all in a situation where we don't expect it to be that way around at the moment.
Yeah, for me, I wish I went down to bookies with my own voice, because I said Norwich were the best side I've seen at Loftus Road this year. I think it was 1-0, it was pooky, but you just controlled the game completely. So quite topical for us is managers, and you've got Daniel Farke there, who's done a good job now, and he was a bit of a left-field choice. How important has his role been at Norwich this year?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that about the game at Loftus Road, because I think most people have only kind of tweaked where Norwich had the potential to go forward a bit later on in the season, because that was quite early on, wasn't it? That game at Loftus Road.
It was.
I think with Daniel, I think you everyone will see what Daniel has done, but it has to be intrinsically linked with what Stuart Webber, the sporting director, has done, which A, was recruiting, but B, the whole plan around his arrival, around the recruitment. So Stuart Webber has been a major driver in terms of the players who have actually come in, the shape of the squad, where the balance is, where the culture of the club needed to change off the back of 7 seasons of some sort of Premier League income and a complete turnover in the squad. So the fact that Daniel's done such a good job from relative unknown, Stuart Webber knew who he was. He'd known him for a while. He'd obviously had similar success in bringing in David Wagner into Huddersfield. And I think a lot of people, when Stuart Webber turned up here and then just recruited the Borussia Dortmund second side boss again, and presumed he was trying his luck for a second time. But having spoken to him a lot, it's quite clear that it was more just a coincidence that Daniel was also where David was, because actually, in terms of who they were, their philosophies and their coaching abilities, they were two men that stood out to him. So I think what Daniel has done has been phenomenal, because I think there were a lot of question marks over how it panned out, not even just last season, but even with how it was looking in the first months of this season. But the way he's rebuilt things and stuck to his philosophy, and everything's just played to his strengths since then, it's a phenomenal job he's done. But I think the whole structure and foundation and solidity, which of course part of that was the patience last season of letting him play youngsters, not even minding if to be honest, they only came 14th. That was almost part of the project at that point, which seems remarkable because no other clubs really involved themselves like that. But I don't think anyone expected the rewards to be so much so soon. But it has come from a plan that's basically just come to perfection, maybe beyond what anyone expected. And clearly, Daniel's abilities are such a key role in that.
Well, plan has been a key word, Michael, really, in this show, because what QPR are now looking for, of course, is a new one. But Gareth mentioned Timo Pukki there. He's, of course, been in fantastic form. 24 goals, 9 assists. He's currently the top scorer in the Championship. And just how important has he been for Norwich this season?
Yeah, we looked at some of our predictions we made back in August, and I think a lot of us were assuming, well, Jordan Rhodes is a proven striker at this level. If he stays fit and scores goals, it'll be fine. And actually, Jordan started the season as the number nine, and Timo was playing in the three behind him, and you know, working hard and running. But the point at which he flipped to playing up top on his own was a watershed moment. I think it was the first game after the first international break, and Norwich have only lost 3 times since then. I'll be brutally honest, he looks like a player who's too good for the Championship. And I know that he sort of scored off various parts of his body, Loftus Road being one of the cases in point. But I've seen it so many times this year that it's not because it just bounces off him and he doesn't know what he's doing. He's just a natural finisher. He manages to look at the situation he's in and take this all in a brief split second and know that he can use some part of his body that he's allowed to put the ball in the net. That's all that matters, is getting the ball over that line and in the net. And that's rare. His movement is phenomenal. He works so hard. I mean, you know, Norwich have been 4-0 up away from home. He's still chasing defenders up top, for, you know, basically just for the sake of putting them under pressure more than anything. So he has been... He's the poster boy, really, for the recruitment that they've done. And that was based on what Daniel Farke said ahead of the game on the weekend. So it's brilliant. What I would say is actually in a little bit of a goal-scoring drought. I don't think he's scored in 4 or 5 games, I think it is now.
Well, help him
like
out
that.
There. He'll score goals.
Well, what he has done, in fairness, is he's still created goals. I think he's created... He's had assists in most of those games. So he is integral in terms of his movement and fluidity and some of the relationships he has with the players just behind him. I think that is so crucial to what Norwich have done, because ultimately they're probably not much better defensively this season. But in terms of going forward, they're a different class.
Well, that was what I was going to ask you, because I remember when you did play us at Loftus Road, actually the fans were starting to get on Farke's back a little bit, because I don't think you'd started the season that well. So there must be some weaknesses. Is it the defence? If we are going to exploit you, how will we do it? Where should we be focusing on trying to beat Norwich this weekend?
Yeah, it's a tricky one to say, because let's be honest, they're having a phenomenal season and everything's in context. What Norwich do and the way they play is they play a high-risk strategy. And even at Middlesbrough on Saturday, one of the things Daniel wanted them to do in terms of improving from their first half to their second half performance was take more risks, was to be braver. And they're probably as brave as any side in the division in terms of how they play football. I remember Bolton came to Carrow Road and we had their sort of their local commentators in the background. I think it was Bolton, I can't remember really. But you know, Norwich were playing it around at the back and this commentator was going, oh my goodness, if they keep doing this, they're going to get caught out. And I think what you actually had is 25,000 supporters and they're going, well, this is what we do all the time. And generally, and I think Tim Krul said something in training that in the press the other day, that actually in training, because those defenders are being pressed by Norwich's strikers, that the quality of pressure they're under in training is sometimes greater than when they're in matches. So they're used to having to work really hard when they're being pressed. And, you know, they do get caught out sometimes. Sometimes Tim Krul will slash a clearance. We saw in the live game against Swansea recently that Dan James chased Tim Krul down twice. So what I would say is if you press Norwich high and you manage to put them under pressure and you do it really well, then you will create chances. Norwich, they've improved defensively recently and they're not, you know, terrible or anything like that, but they do give you chances. They do play with high risk, and that means that there can be rewards if the opponent does it right. What I would add, though, to that is that by the same token, Norwich have gone behind numerous times this year, and you always think, and they always look like they've got more than one goal in them themselves, which is it's kind of relentless. So it takes a lot of things probably to come off, and it's happened once or twice. So I think if QPR can compress Norwich well enough, which Carrow Road might be tricky. I mean, the crowd aren't entirely there at Carrow Road either. They've sometimes been a bit passive, which, given the situation they're in, has been a little bit disappointing. So, if all the stars align in that sort of respect, then QPR might get some joy.
Michael, if I had to press you for a score prediction, what would you go for?
Well, I think it's very hard to see Norwich not winning. I have to say that clearly Steve going does mix it up completely, because you imagine that it's a simple case that now he's not there, those players will raise their level. By the same token, sometimes a team turns up like that and they're even more of a loss than they were before whoever left. So, and I guess whoever comes in will be looking at an appointment for next season. So ultimately, I'm let's say QPR will score, but maybe Norwich to win 3-1.
3-1 Norwich.
Sorry.
You heard it here.
That's
all right.
Thanks, it's only three.
We'll give you in time, Michael. And yeah, thanks. It's only three. Thanks ever so much for talking to us. Michael Bailey there, who is Norwich City correspondent for the Eastern Daily Press and Pinken.com. We've got some full-time scores for you from around the country. Fulham are relegated. Final score, Fulham 4, Watford 4, Fulham 1, rather. Fulham go down very sadly. Wolves get a massive result against United. It finishes 2-1 there after Ashley Young was sent off. Yay. Bristol City 1, Middlesbrough 0. Swansea City 3, Brentford 0. A terrible result for the Bees. And some London results for you in the National League. AFC Fylde 1, Dagenham Redbridge 1. Massive result for Bromley, 2-1 win over the league leaders Leighton Orient. And Eastleigh go down 3-0 to Barnet. And it's time for your final clue in this week's Who Are You, which is...
Gareth thinks he's got it already.
I think we've got it.
Okay.
Got it.
Well,
go on, go with it. You've
got to guess in our next segment anyway. But I have been caretaker manager of QPR twice. Don't go anywhere.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the QPR Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio, and it's time for the Road to Gnowhere, where we discuss all of the random QPR-style stories of the week. And I think, gents, we should start with a certain Mr. Danny Parejo.
Yep.
Yeah, great player for us. God, it must be like 15 years ago now. Oh. He's 29
I remember his debut was Fitz Hall when he missed a penalty for the hat-trick against Barnsley. And a Barnsley player tried to break his leg. I think it was that Bobby Hassel or whatever. But
he was clearly a step above our players, even aged 18.
He was too good for us.
And he was on loan from Real Madrid. And
Ledesma.
Wasn't it De Stefano went on strike or something because he was so upset that the best youth player he'd ever seen at Real Madrid had been sent on loan. And
to QPR.
Worse than that, on loan to QPR. But yeah, he was great. I remember him doing a bit of a dive at Reading once in the box, which was a bit unsavoury. But other than that, he just looked...
I think
amazing.
They spent about $9 million for him in Valencia as well. But he's the best player in... He's the most consistent La Liga player now.
That's what they're saying.
That's not bad, is it? I think that's QPR. Who was the manager of QPR then? Dowie?
Wasn't it Di Canio?
Is it Di Canio? Might be
Dowie. I think it was Di
Canio. One of them has influenced Danny Parejo to be the best
in
La Liga.
And Liverpool at one point were supposedly coming in for him for about 20 million about 4 or 5 years ago. So, you know, if only we'd kept hold of him or signed him. Some subtle kind of...
So a player clause. That's gone from not so good. He wasn't even getting his first team start at QPR. He was on the bench sometimes, which is just random. To Adel Taarabt, who's had a bit of a fall from grace, but has bounced back a little bit, hasn't he? He said he made his debut
after signing 4 years ago. He actually came on at the weekend.
That's got to be a record.
That is staggering.
That's got to be a record, surely. Yeah.
You would have thought so.
Somewhere along the line.
There will be some players who never make a debut, of course.
Like reserve team keepers, like Rob Green.
He finally shed that gold jacket that you mentioned last week, or was it Gav?
It wasn't here last week, so if I mentioned it, it was telekinesis, Kyle.
So he took that off and they brought him on, I think it was second half, and then they got a winner and he's 1-1-0. So it's pretty impressive that Farnie's there. Maybe it was the rumours of him coming back to QPR.
What a better place to stay in Benfica now.
Got him back in the team.
But was he 30 now? Is he 29, 30?
I think he's similar age, yeah.
Crikey.
So it's the end.
The Tiger Feet Walk, I think you kindly donated.
Yeah, I did. I was going to take my boys along, but then my wife told me they had two birthday parties to go to. So, and the thought of walking 13 miles for me is probably a little bit much at my age. But I fancied joining them at Acton Park and then walking all the way to the stadium.
The glory walk, glory mile.
The last bit down.
So the Tiger Feet Walk is the annual charity walk for QPR and Community Trust to raise money for the Tiger Cubs, which was the first ever Down syndrome football team.
Lovely.
And it's raised over the years, probably raised over about 100,000 now.
It's about 14 grand for this walk.
14 grand. I think they've done, they normally walk to like an away fixture, like a Charlton or a Palace, but a couple of years we haven't really had that. They walked to Watford one year and I think they got lost, so they didn't do Watford again. so they walked from the training ground now and it's raised, what, 14k?
Yeah,
so
like
it's a great effort and people been doing
Birch
it.
Birch was there and Sinton obviously went and a few.
10
few
years
others.
Of doing that now. It's a great achievement for the trust once again. Mattel, we're talking about Amit and owners.
Well, we're kind of thinking as I've always hoped that this would happen is that Amit's now the chairman and his father in law is in this court battle to try and get $1 billion.
As you do.
Or £1 billion, I think it is, from his rival, who was once his best friend, these steel magnates. You know, most of us fight over a tenner, but they fight over a billion.
It's quite sad that, whether it is a tenner or a billion, ending up scrapping with your best mate in court.
I'm hoping that's our transfer fund. So if he thinks it's like losing it down the side of a sofa, he might say, well, now I've won this back.
How many Tom Hemeds is that? A billion? That would get you a few, wouldn't it?
Maybe.
How many goals would that get you, though?
How many yards is more the question? Will he actually
the
run?
Hard yards.
So maybe if he recovers that, we've got a transfer budget for next year.
But they are the minority shareholders, and you can't really spend your way out of the Championship anyway now, apart from Wolves did it, and others have failed miserably, like the Birminghams and Sheffield Wednesdays. And then the tweet of the week, I kind of like this one.
Did you see it?
I did watch it, yeah.
It's brilliant.
Robert Smith from The Cure, long-term QPR fan. Doesn't seem like a QPR fan. I can get like Pete Doherty, or I can get, yeah.
Well, when I've seen The Cure play, sadly the bass guitarist, or lead guitarist, is a big Reading fan. So unfortunately, I've seen a Reading flag on the stage.
Ooh, for
not
The Cure?
Yeah, for The Cure. There's only like two fundamentals. Yeah, I love The Cure.
Yeah.
Love Robert Smith. But he doesn't really play the whole football card, which I respect him for. Right? He's a musician. But he, you talk about the tweet because it's very funny. If you haven't seen it.
I watched it, but it was what awards was it? Was it an awards show?
So the Cure had been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which has been happening a lot this week because Radiohead were in there as well. They were inducted by David Byrne.
They should be QPR fans. They're depressed enough to be QPR fans. Radiohead.
They're from Oxford, so they might be Oxford fans.
Abingdon. But Abingdon School.
The music would suit QPR, actually.
Yeah.
A little bit of that.
A bit depressing,
but,
yeah.
But the host of this induction, she was very, very excited. And she just went, are you excited as I am? And Robert Smith was like, well, by the sounds of it, no. It's just like, you are so excited about She was buzzing, yeah. Naturally around a QPR fan, that's what happens. And then, it's Gavin's birthday, who's not here, so we can't forgive our leader, you know, we can't forget our leader's 39th birthday.
Well, I was being told earlier by Julian via email that he's currently on a bouncy castle. What's that about?
Well, I said that was very wrong of Julian said about his girlfriend, so.
Don't say that, she'll kill me next time I see her.
Hopefully, that's the plan. But no, he's away. We spent the weekend together celebrating, commiserating many Sambucas and Jamesons after the Bolton game. But yeah, it's his birthday today, so he's not here.
We got Sean Derry to sing him happy birthday on a little recording for
the table. We'll play that to you, Gav, next time we see you. And the prediction table, I mean, I'm rock bottom anyway, and the opposition view is like flying away with this. So we've got 3-1 this week. And
the opposition view, the last week was the first time. No,
what did Bolton say?
There's been two times when the opposition view has got it wrong. The Rotherham lady went for a draw and they obviously won. And the Bolton fan last week went for a 2-0 defeat, and they obviously got 2-1.
Everyone went 2-0 QPR last week.
But I'd like to think that meant we've caught up with them, but actually it's producer's second, and you are rock bottom. You're the most optimistic QPR fan ever.
You know, you live in hope. If I lived and listened to radio songs and went to QPR every week, I might not be here next week, so you know, I don't want to be doing that. But
maybe you should do a prediction on who is going to be the next QPR manager, and we'll give you double points if you can get that right.
Well, that'll rocket me to the top of the league.
I'll give you like a joker, Bruce's bonus, if you get the manager
Julian's
right.
Julian's bonus.
And I still stand by it. It should be there in 24 hours if they've got a plan. Otherwise, it's just a knee-jerk reaction.
I don't know. The noise is saying Bowyer, but I reckon it could be Sherwood. I'll go Bowyer because that's who I would take out of that basket case of a selection of managers, really. I'm waiting
he's
for
not
Ron
gonna,
Atkinson to get the shout.
He's not going to confirm that until they've done the playoffs.
Well, the Sky thing said he would like to talk to QPR. So
yeah, because he's not got a job next season. But if he takes them up, he's got a job next season, surely.
Yeah, maybe.
But then at Charlton, you do have the Duchatelet situation hanging over you. Yeah. The fact that all of that is a total nightmare. So even QPR might seem preferable. Talking of potential new managers of QPR, it is, of course, time to reveal the answer of this week's Who Are You? So your four clues were, I once turned out for Cambridge United. I once moved to a then Premier League club for £2 million.
I got this.
I like chairs.
I got this. Are you going to say who you actually said?
And I have been caretaker manager of QPR twice.
See, that was the one that done for me, really, because up until that point, I thought it was Andy Sinton.
And
I thought
why was that?
Well, he played for Cambridge, I think. He did go for £2 million. That's two out of two.
To Sheffield Wednesday.
And if a Japanese fan said, Andy, sit on, it would sound like sit on, like a chair. That's where I was going with that one. But then the last one, the caretaker manager, I obviously knew that it was...
Well, obviously chairs and chair boys and Wickham, we'd already had that clue, but you didn't connect it.
Gareth
didn't connect it, but Gareth Ainsworth, obviously.
Gareth Ainsworth.
The next manager of QPR.
Not Andy Sitton, then.
Correct. Not Andy Sitton, sadly, but worth a go. Hopefully... In it to win it. Hopefully this time next week, we will have a new QPR manager to be talking about. Could it be Ainsworth? Could it be Tim Sherwood? No, who knows? Well, you won't
be
here.
It'd be an empty stadium if it is.
I think it could be Harry Redknapp, to be honest with you.
Well, I'm not going to ask you to predict the new gaffer because it clearly can't be done. But I am going to ask you for your score predictions for Norwich, gents.
What I'm
going to
go 2-2.
2-2?
Yeah.
Okay.
Desmond.
Desmond.
I can't see us winning. It's going to be 3-1.
That's
what they
said.
Went for. I'll go 3-0 because we're not going to score.
Dear.
Three. It's not positive in the studio.
2-2, all right. Yeah. I'll take that. Bite your hand off.
Is there any kind of managerial appointment that could put you in a good mood within reason? I'm not talking about Pep here.
Or Arsene Wenger. He's not doing nothing. He likes London.
Yeah. So does Mourinho.
Is there I think a QPR fan, a QPR legend like an Ainsworth is an easy, cheap win to quell
well
the fan base. But you might as well bring Ollie back for that.
Yeah.
You could bring Pertchen back in for that. I don't know. I do think this left field, no baggage person is the only thing that might be something a bit different that people can say, oh, they've actually got a strategy now. They're going for that. But no.
Someone with youth.
Well, hopefully by this time next week, someone with youth will be in charge at QPR and we will have a new manager to tell you about. Join us next time on the QPR Fan Show.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.